and welcome to another episode of Juicebox Music Podcast. I'm your host, Hunter McClamrock. Joining me on the other line, as always, finding roaches in the pot, it's Nicholas Moreau.
What's up, man?
How's it going? Good.
I was wondering what analogy or like what part of a song you would pick. I was going to wonder if you're going to ask me if I tinted my windows yet. Anyway, I'm doing well.
You know, one of my favorite songs on a record we're going to talk about this week. So those of you looking for Easter eggs with our intros, you probably already know what it is.
Ah, there we go.
How are you feeling?
Good. I mean, look, it's beautiful still in Portland. We got a teaser of the fall coming this weekend, but the sun has come to grace us for the last 2 days. So it's kind of maybe a last glimmer of hope. I don't know.
Great. Well, I just finishing a very strong iced coffee. I'm feeling good. Blueberry notes, chocolate notes, a little bit in there. Just a lot of flavor going on. Getting ready. You know, speaking of fall, I'm headed to the East Coast tomorrow. Hopefully get a little taste of that fall action myself.
Nice. That sounds fun.
Pack a jacket for good luck. What else is new, Nick?
I ended up going to a show last week I wanted to talk to you about.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Friday night. It's this band we haven't talked enough about. This band called Idols.
Idols.
No, we've talked at length about Idols.
I believe, Nick, this is their first real full-on U.S. tour. There's been, like, I think a few on the East Coast before, but the first time they're making their way across the country and back.
Exactly. And you can definitely tell by their Instagram pictures because they're taking pictures of random stuff that you wouldn't find amazing probably as a resident of the USA. But maybe if it's your first time touring, you're like, oh, look at this thing. Look at this sign. That's funny.
I've always thought about what it must be like to experience, you know, the Midwest and like the South and driving through like the plains, endless plains of Texas for the first time as somebody coming from a relatively geographically small country like that. Just how much wide open space there is aside from like the great cities in the U.S. That just must be mind blowing.
Yeah. No, I never thought about that. Like, you know, a lot of people first come to the U.S. and go to New York or L.A. or one of the big cities. But if your first time is like literally jumping in a car and driving cross country, that must be an interesting way to see the country for the first time. I would say
definitely
an interesting way to see the country anytime. But
well, I'm excited. You know, we talked about it earlier this year. I saw Idols a couple times earlier this summer in Europe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they dropped the album that we both loved in August, but really were not playing any new material live until the album actually hit the shelves of stores. I mean, Brutalism was not a very old album. They were still kind of on that cycle. So now we have like two albums in, first U.S. tour. What was the show like?
Hunter, it was maybe the best show I've seen in Portland in the last six years I've been there. It was unbelievable. Let me set the stage. So they're playing at Doug Fir Lounge, which if you haven't been to Doug Fir, it's kind of an underground venue. It sits below a restaurant by the same name. And it's very David Lynchy kind of. I always think it's very David Lynchy as a venue. You know, it's all made out of wood, big wood beams. The floor by the bar is lit from the bottom. So like there's lights coming out of the floor, under you. And the sound at Doug Fir is always amazing. Like they do a really good job with the bands coming through to really, sound check them really well. And for that reason, it's my favorite venue in Portland. So that was already a good thing. The show was sold out. So that was also a very good thing. Because, you know, when a show is sold out at Doug Fir, and it's kind of a small venue, the crowd is pretty packed. And for something like Idols, I was expecting that it would get a little rowdy. Well, it did not disappoint. It got very rowdy. But I would say, you know, in the kind of rowdiness that is very respectful, where if you found yourself falling because of the mosh pit, people picked you right back up and put you on your feet. There was no aggressive moshing. It was more like running into each other at various speeds, and endless crowd surfing. So, you know, some venues in Portland will say you're not allowed to crowd surf and really discourage it. Here at the Doug Fur, I've always seen the venue let people crowd surf, and Idols as a band, I want to say, were really, really cool about it. And when people got close to the stage, you know, riding on people's hands, they would help that person up on the stage and guide them off, you know, just quickly. But
did you get in there, Nick? Did you?
You know, I didn't. The reason I didn't is because I had these really open pockets, and I was afraid that my phone would fall out and I would never be able to find it again. So,
you know, there, in the old days, people, kids used to just be able to mosh without even having to worry about the cell phone in their
pocket. Oh, no, no. I didn't mosh the whole show. I didn't crowd surf, I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm. I moshed so much.
I guess that, they are separate things.
Yeah, I was wearing, you know, it was quite cold that day. I was wearing a sweater and a coat, and by the end of the show, I sweated through my coat.
Well, that's disgusting.
Yeah, it was really gross. Everybody was.
I hope you have a nice dry cleaner.
Yeah, it was really gross. Anyway, so I haven't worn the coat since. I haven't washed it yet.
Well, thank you. Give us an update when you do. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, apart from like the energy of the crowd, and I would say the show started at 11 and went to a 15 real quick, just like Brett Kavanaugh in his Senate hearings.
Whoa. So how, what was the set list like? Was it a pretty even split between the two records, or was it really focused on the new one? I mean, they could probably play both albums in a little over an hour set.
They basically played every song.
Okay.
Yeah. And the, you know, the way they did it, like, it was one of those shows where the first song was Colossus, and then the energy was so high. But then six songs later, like, it kept going higher and higher.
They don't have a lot of, like, you know, ballads or sort of mid-tempo songs to take a respite from the action during their set.
Yeah. There was one part where the opening band called Bambara, which was really good. The opening band, I think, I can't remember who in the opening band, but it was that person's birthday. Mm-hmm. So they brought him out on stage and told the crowd to not let him touch the floor. So he jumped in the crowd for the entirety of the song and was just crowd surfing the whole song. And obviously there was a lot of energy in the during the song. I mean, the band members made out. They invited about 20 people on stage during Exeter, but never asking anybody to come on stage. They just pointed at someone and brought them on stage. And then slowly but surely, 20 people ended up on stage, and they even gave their instruments to them and let them play whatever they wanted. It was pretty nuts.
The real question is, Nick, would you be interested in any dental work from the guitar player? Did he seem like a reliable dentist on stage? That's maybe the single most fascinating thing about the band to me.
I know. I still can't believe that. having gone through
Portland, if you hadn't listened to another or earlier episode where we were talking about Idols, one of the guitar players in Idols actually is a dentist by day and maintains that job even as the band is kind of taking off around the world.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I don't know if I would. Actually, I probably would. I went to the dentist yesterday. Actually, I probably would have rather have one of the members of Idols be my dentist, just because it'd be more fun.
I had a dentist appointment this morning, but I canceled it just on the offhand chance that I can. They're playing here in town tonight. The offhand chance I can kind of wrangle him backstage and get this little filling that's been bothering me, this little thing. I think it's just a filling that's gotten a little loose on the top right side of my mouth, and it's kind of driving me crazy. Like, if I bite into something hard, it always it makes it hurt quite a bit. So I feel like you would be understanding.
Well, just chat with him after the show.
Yeah. Yeah, they're playing with what's that opening band name that Bambara? You mentioned? Bambara. They're playing in town tonight, so I really hope to check them out. I haven't heard, like I said, any of the new songs live at all, or seen them in an environment other than like a festival environment. And I'm sure the club atmosphere would be perfect for them.
It sounds, I was blown away. I wish I could have gone to Seattle the next day to see them. But alas, are you drinking whiskey?
It's iced coffee, like I said at the beginning. You're not listening to me? Black House Blend.
Nice. So, yeah. So, if you have a chance to catch Idols on their U.S. tour, you got to.
I think this is the last date tonight. Oh, so okay. You may have missed your chance. But, like I mentioned, I'm hoping to catch them tonight because I'm going to see Jarvis Cocker live here in LA, making a very rare appearance. So I'm banking on the fact that I think Idols will be back around pretty soon. Their fan base is quite dedicated, and I think you mentioned the show was sold out. The show sold out here. I think they're really making an impact over here in the States just as much as in the UK at the moment.
Well, the other thing that was impressive to me, the record is only 2 weeks old when I saw the show, I think, or maybe 3 weeks old. And everybody knew every single lyric of every song. there was songs where the singer was just not singing.
Was the audience, what was the gender makeup of the audience?
I'd say 75 male, 25 female.
Okay. I kind of thought that maybe Idols had a little bit of a larger female fan base contingent, but maybe not in Portland. Because thinking about it, like some of the other punk shows I've seen recently, I know that I've met a lot of female fans of theirs. So I was curious about that.
I will say, though, that in the mosh pit, there was a lot of women in the mosh pit.
And a very respectful crowd, like you said.
Yeah, super respectful.
I would expect nothing less from them.
I would say it was a grown-up mosh pit. But you know, to give you an example, at some point during the show, somebody yelled, "Fuck Theresa May," and the lead singer said, "No, mate, she's still a person." He said, "Fuck her policies, but she's still a person." And then they just launched into another song. So, yeah, it's that kind of band.
Well, definitely support them. Look forward to them coming back over here. I bet you sometime late spring. Maybe we'll see them on the Coachella lineup next year. I would not be surprised at all.
Not be surprised, yeah.
Another band that we really like, we've talked about a lot on the show, and kind of in the same, I know they're friends with Idols and kind of maybe the... the Oasis to Idols blur of our times. Shame coming back to the States again, making another round of appearances in support of their January album, Songs of Praise, one that's come up a lot on the show. I got to go down to Music Tastes Good Festival in Long Beach last weekend, Nick, where Shame was one of the supporting acts a little bit further down the bill, but. Got there just in time to see them. I was excited to see them as anybody else playing on the bill for the whole festival. I have to say, Long Beach, very chill spot. Right there by, right here, a little park on the marina full of sailboats and little motorboats. It's a nice backdrop for a festival, a very low-key festival, plenty of elbow room, which I really appreciate having gone to some pretty tightly packed shows recently. Beautiful day. Mm-hmm. Kind of strange to see Shame out there in the middle of the sunlight like that.
Yeah.
A very different show than when you and I saw them together at the Echo in LA earlier this year. They played a new song, which sounded great. I think they might be doing some recording out here. They're kind of bookending their tour, going from Long Beach to the East Coast, back around to, the West Coast to close it out next week. It was great to see them. Singer's got blonde hair now.
I saw
that's the biggest change from the last time that that we caught them together. Cool festival. I really enjoyed my time there, Nick. A lot of kids around, great food options. It's called Music Tastes Good because they invite a lot of chefs. Mm. They were highlighting the West Coast this year, so everything from Baja California all the way up to British Columbia. They had chefs flown in, and you could buy tickets and to, you know, individual booths and sample a lot of great food, which was a lot of, you know, and they, in each day there was rotating chefs, and they were kind of recording food centric podcasts in this food hall and doing live shows while the chefs were cooking in the background. You could sample, you know, like a wide variety of things, desserts, seafood, great tacos, of course, different things like that.
Did you get to talk to anybody about cooking music?
You know, it was kind of implicit, like, that some of the earlier bands were really good cooking music. I got to catch Blake Mills live, mm-hmm. Which I thought he made, you know, some really nice cooking music. He was, you know, we were talking about Jason Pierce and Spiritualized last week on the show, and Blake Mills, he takes a similar stage presence to Jason Pierce, sits down with the guitar, just gets real into the groove of it. He had Pino Palladino on bass, who is like, I don't know how old this guy is, but he's a legendary bass player. The first concert I ever went to, The Who, when I was young, my parents took me. He was the bass player there. Wow. He plays with D'Angelo, like more sessions than you can imagine. When he got introduced, I was kind of like, wow, he's like, well, there's a legend in our midst here. But that was a great, like, mid-afternoon set. Blake Mills is a guitar virtuoso. I don't know if you've gotten to hear, I mean, even Eric Clapton has said he's the best guitar player alive right now. Wow. And he's kind of, I mean, he put out two solo records that I really like, but he is kind of has this side hustle going on as a producer, and has produced some pretty big rock records in the last few years, like Dawes, Alabama Shakes, things like that. But I super recommend checking him out. I have no idea when he's going to come out with another album. And, you know, the whole day kind of felt like it was building up to New Order's headlining set. I would say the crowd was a little older probably. And even, you know, for the headlining set, there was plenty of room to kind of breathe and kind of chill out. And the only thing with New Order is I just have trouble with them now that I feel like they need to change their name now that Peter Hook isn't in the band. I mean, there's only like three members of New Order, right? So you lose one leg of the triangle, you kind of become a different thing, even if you have other musicians playing with you.
And it's been weird.
It's weird. And they've created this scenario where there's like, I know there's a few other legacy rock groups that are kind of like this, but, you know, Peter Hook has Peter Hook and the Lights, and then there's what's remaining of New Order, and they're kind of these competing review shows with, you know, Peter Hook will tour and they'll do a certain Joy Division album all the way through, and, you know, New Order is still peppering their set with a lot of Joy Division songs as well. So get the gang back together if you're going to be cashing in like this. You know, I understand that they've had strained relationships for years, but, you know, if you really want the cash that much, just grin and bear it, right?
Yeah, it's so sad. Joy Division being one of my favorite bands, like, that this is happening. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was. I thought it was fine. I mean, you know, the bass parts are replicated well. They're, you know, for a smaller size festival like this, New Order is a great kind of headliner. They only played like 11 or 12 songs, a lot of them extended versions, but they're all hits, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So they did. I thought the festival was more interesting, like some of the smaller acts on the bill. The next day we got Parquet Courts, who were awesome and put out one of my favorite records this year. And I'm still kind of surprised because I never really liked that band before. And now I'm kind of like all in.
Yeah. So you liked their show? That was good. Yeah. I really enjoyed their show.
Yeah. They're coming. As soon as the show happened here, they announced a headlining show in town, with Snail Mail. Ooh. So that would be quite a juice box endorsed show.
Yeah.
I'll probably have to go check that out. I caught a little of Janelle Monáe's show, a little Broken Social Scene. Those are some of the other memorable sets throughout the weekend. I really want to love Janelle Monáe, but there's something about her songwriting that is not that accessible to me. And I think she's an incredible performer, but there's something that I'm just a little bit lukewarm on. I don't know. It hasn't broken through for me yet.
I feel the same way about Broken Social Scene. So
I like that. I love that one record when it came out, You Forgot It in People. Is that what it's called? Yeah, that sounds about right, right? It's been a long time since I heard it, but that was a whole scene. It was broken. It was social. It was Canadian. And then Feist became a huge star, and now they're still out there doing occasional festival sets. Yeah, well, but I will say, like, love the festival. I'm super excited to see what they'll come back with next year. And I'd recommend it to anybody looking for something to do. Long Beach, cool city, and really enjoyed my time there. It's nice to get down there to LA's port cousin, cousin by the sea. I feel like I was going to say little brother, but that just feels demeaning, right?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think Long Beach would take it.
It's its own thing. Yeah. It's got its own thing going on there.
I'm sure Vince Staples has a name for it.
Vince Staples, come on the show. Talk to us about Long Beach.
Yeah.
I have questions about the Queen Mary.
Let's go.
Yeah. So, anyway, Nick, any records you want to talk about that have come out in the last few weeks? It's been, we had a lot going on with catching up with August and September, and now we're kind of back to the normal pace of seeing what's coming out week to week.
I wanted to talk about this EP you turned me on to called From Petit Noir, the Belgian Congolese composer by way of South Africa. It's called La Maison Noire or The Black House. The album of the name of the EP is both a French and an English title.
He's really showing us his French skills with his titling and his name, not so much on the actual record itself.
Yeah, because his LP before that was La Vie est Belle, Life is Beautiful.
But were you a fan of that album? Is that something that was on your radar ever?
No, I only listened to the LP for the first time this week as well.
Oh, cool.
But it made me, this EP is such a banger. So good.
It's so unique too. Like beyond the music, like the visuals behind it, and there's, I guess there's a, what they're calling a visual album that accompanies it. We texted about it a little bit yesterday, and since then I did get a chance to check it out.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
It's kind of like it's not the entire EP. It's like about 17 or 18 minutes long cut together. It's like just a lot of beautiful photography of him doing crazy things, mostly in the desert. There's a lot of fire and color involved. It's really like a feast for the eyes. I have no idea what the metaphorical meaning of it is, but really cool stuff.
Yeah. And I thought, the first thing I thought when I listened to this EP in full, so it's six songs, 27 minutes, so which is about the length of a Kanye album these days. So it does feel like, it's something that's worth investing some time into, because it's not that short. But what I thought was, like, if this album came out in May, it would have been my album in the summer. And then I thought about it. Well, actually, technically, it's coming out, if he's in South Africa, it's coming out right before the summer over there. So it might be the album in the summer.
I like how you're flipping it.
You know what I mean?
I think you're just thinking of our Northern Hemisphere elitist point of view right now, Nick.
Yeah,
I like it.
So, it might be the album of the summer. Summer's just everywhere all the time, it turns out.
Most of the time we talk about our songs of the summer and our albums of the summer. Everybody down under is like, what is this album of the winter? What is this crap?
Exactly.
What's your favorite song of the winter? Nobody cares.
Exactly. So I would encourage anybody who is missing summer right now to listen to this, because it is packed full with energy. and also a lot of African beats, which is really, really fun. I was thinking, like, I was trying to describe it to somebody, and I was trying to say, like, imagine TV on the radio never existed, and they formed in 2018. This might be what you'd get.
Hmm. That's funny. Like, I think about TV on the radio with that Young Fathers album a little bit, mm-hmm. and then that Foxing album that we listened to that we talked about earlier this summer, and their impact in like 2018. And it doesn't even feel like they're a particularly hip band or having like a resurgence in popularity. I don't know if it's just the fusion of sounds like in this, in today's age with like access to a lot more music and people, you know, from different countries having a larger impact on popular music as a whole, that maybe it just, the synthesizing of all these sounds is creating something that sounds like TV on the radio, and they end up being like a band that was way ahead of their time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And nobody knew it, you know, until it starts to come back around.
I agree.
I liked, his full length album, Life is Beautiful, quite a bit. I listened to it, you know, on and off, and it felt very promising to me. It wasn't like my favorite album of the year or near the top or anything like that. But I think, you know, he's really fulfilled a lot of the promise with this EP, and it's really like dramatic and really fun to listen to. And like, I like to listen to, I gave it a go in driving in like really heavy traffic, but like weaving through streets, not on the highway, you know, trying to make a lot of shortcuts, and it got me pretty amped. I was making some pretty dangerous moves, but I felt like I had a lot of control.
Awesome. So a good driving album.
Good driving. Yeah. Good technical driving album.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great for a 30-minute commute too, I have to say.
Yeah. Check out the visual album behind that. And I don't know if he's got like a full length coming anytime soon, but really, really, really like that record.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's up there. Again, what an incredible year for music we're having right now. Like, this is, I love this kind of stuff, this random surprise that I end up falling in love with. So thank you for that, Hunter.
Another, you know, hotly anticipated follow-up kind of dropped quietly last week, first on Bandcamp, and then a week later hitting Spotify and Apple Music and all the streaming services. Mm-hmm. But Pine Grove was back with their follow-up to Cardinal called Skylight. And we don't have to get too far into what's gone on with Pine Grove in the last year or so, but this album has been finished for a while. And I saw them like towards the end of the year, maybe October, maybe about a year ago, at a sold out show with the audience eating out of the palm of their hands. And then they basically disappeared for a year.
Yeah.
There were some allegations of sexual coercion against the lead singer in the band. And he put out a statement saying that they were taking time off. He was going to get counseling and all these different things. And, you know, they finally have come back. There was a big Pitchfork article about their comeback. And it was interesting because they were addressing some of these issues with the band, but also kind of announcing that this new album was going to come out at the same time. Mm-hmm. The tone of that was kind of strange. But reviewing this album, talking about this album on the musical merits of it, it really is like picking up exactly where Cardinal left off. An album I think that surprisingly like enduring. They're the kind of band that inspires like a lot of people to get tattoos of their logo with the square inside the square. Mm-hmm. You know, they have this really devoted fan base. A lot of their fans, I know the requirement is that you have your shirt tucked in. And I'm not even joking. I was on their like Reddit the other day, and there's allusions to tucking your shirt in all over there. So, you know, it's kind of like this preppy emo thing. I don't know what the kids are doing these days with their clothes, Nick, but that's another story.
Yeah. Yeah. Make sure you tuck it in.
Did you get a chance to listen to it?
I listened to it a couple of times. Yeah. I don't think I liked it as much as Cardinal. I don't think I also listened to it enough to give a good judgment. It was good. I have to say, you know, it was one of those albums that I was listening to between listens of the Petit Noir album, and I just was really looking forward to going back to Petit Noir.
Very different moods. Very, you know, Pine Grove are kind of this emo-afflicted, almost like they have like a rootsy kind of Americana feel to their music, but I wouldn't ever put their music in that category at all. Yeah. It's kind of like to me, I think of them if like early Wilco went emo.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I find that like really, really affecting, like a lot of feeling behind their songs and some really, really nice lyrics. I've listened to this album quite a bit since it came out. I was really looking forward to it, and it's, I don't think it's quite as good as Cardinal either, but it's not very far off for me.
Yeah.
So really solid follow.
Yeah. I would agree. Yeah.
There's a song, called, I think it's the fourth song on the record, called Patterson and Leo. That's, I think, the names of his two dogs. And it's just a song thanking his dogs for existing, which, you know, I'm game for every time.
Yeah, that's always a good thing to write about.
Got to celebrate our furry friends, you know.
Especially, and we love them. We love them.
But yeah, Pine Grove are back. They're like back. They already sold out a show here. I think they're kind of peeking their heads back out there. You know, say for people who don't know what's gone on with them, read that. Look, just Google Pine Grove and Pitchfork and read that article that came out a few weeks ago. You know, it's very far from what like our Supreme Court justices have been accused of. And the way that the band has handled it has been, you know, quite respectful and just interesting trying to mount a continuation of a career that was going so well and not disappearing. And granted, like I said, the allegations are not as damning as some, but
yeah,
fascinating time and culture and they're just another band that's a big part of it.
There was an article recently about a lot of these individuals that have been wrapped up in the Me Too movement trying to make a comeback, you know.
Yeah.
Think about Louis C.K., Pine Grove comes to mind, and how they're like slowly trying to make a comeback. So it'll be interesting.
Well, one thing that's interesting, if you read the Pine Grove article, you'll find this out, but, you know, they have been given permission by the accuser to go ahead and continue, and that, you know, necessary penance was made and you know, it's, you know, a personal thing between a few individuals, but you know, they have the blessing to go out there and continue, whereas I think some other people trying to make a comeback, Louis C.K., certainly R. Kelly, who still hasn't completely been taken down by the Me Too movement somehow, definitely haven't been and are still kind of trying to navigate how to make a comeback. Yeah, I mean, R. Kelly's still out there, you know, out there.
Yeah,
still out there playing shows.
I guess nobody was surprised, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess not. But yeah, Pine Grove, I think it's going to be an album I'm going to listen to a lot. It feels like a fall album to me. Their music feels like fall, walking through fallen leaves in a park in New Jersey in the fall to me.
Yeah.
Speaking of dogs and how they manipulate us.
Is this an ad for the SPCA?
I wish it was. I wish we had sponsorship from them. I would take that on. I saw a movie over the weekend, Nick, that I thought was worth talking on our show. Everybody's talking about A Star Is Born.
Yeah.
Bradley Cooper, the auteur, directing and starring and playing a kind of a, well, not exactly washed up musician in this movie, but one whose career has seen better days. And Lady Gaga, the young ingenue who he discovers and, you know, whose star quickly ascends above his. You have any interest in this movie at all, Nick?
Yeah, sorry, somebody was honking.
Do you have any interest in this movie at all?
I do, actually. I'm very interested. It's just a matter of me being able to go to the movie theater. But if I could, I would definitely go see it. I mostly like movies about musicians or bands, so I'm interested. Plus, like, it seems like a lot of people think it's good, so
it cleaned up at the box office over the weekend. And I think, you know, what's relevant for our purposes is I think the soundtrack is actually going to have some legs. I expect to see it on the charts for months to come, probably. I mean, the strength of there's a Lady Gaga song that's probably, if you've seen the trailer for the movie, it's called Shallow. If you've seen the trailer for the movie, it's prominently featured. And it was written by Lady Gaga and Mark Ronson and Andrew Wyatt from, what was that band? He wrote songs on Liam Gallagher's solo album, Mike Snow. Mm. And you know, this guitar player who I saw play in the Libertines replacing Pete Doherty when he was not allowed in the country for some kind of drug issue, who's made a second career as a songwriter. It's a great song. And also my favorite song by Bradley Cooper's character, his name is Jackson Maine in the movie, was written by Jason Isbell. And it's basically just a Jason Isbell song that could have been on any of his last few albums. But it's pretty good. Like, they did building the movie based on the songs. They really came up with the goods for the most part with the songs. I think it's really pretty strong. You know, a lot of times, like, you see these movies about musicians and, you know, you don't really buy it because the songs aren't really there. You don't really see how they could be popular.
Yeah. I agree. Well, that's cool. I love when the soundtrack is really good too. That helps.
Yeah. So I think, you know, having Lady Gaga, who is a huge pop star and a good songwriter on her own, was pretty inspired casting. You know, it was originally supposed to star Beyonce for a long time and be directed by Clint Eastwood.
Ooh, what happened?
I think they went through a number of lead actors until somehow the sniper himself, Bradley Cooper, got involved. And, you know, he just felt inspired. He went on the road with Eddie Vedder to learn about the rock star lifestyle. So modeled the character a bit on the Pearl Jam frontman.
Okay.
And I think got some advice from Jason Isbell as well. You know, it's the kind of movie, it takes itself really, really seriously, but somehow, like, so seriously that you're waiting to, like, laugh at it, but it somehow pulls off being, like, a pretty emotionally moving movie.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I really like movies about music. I mean, that's enough to get me in the door for the most part. Not necessarily musicals, though. I'm not like a big musical person.
So what's your favorite movie, music-related movie?
Well, if we're talking like any movie, including documentaries, one of my favorite films of not documentaries.
No, go ahead.
What? What'd I do?
No, go ahead. I just thought you were going to say The Last Waltz because, like, seems like everybody's favorite music documentary. But I have favorite music movies that are documentaries, so go ahead.
One of my favorite movies of all time is Dig, which is about Dandy Warhols and the Brian Jonestown Massacre.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've probably seen this movie, like, seriously, like 30 times because I can never get enough of it. And, you know, it's about the rivalry between the Dandy Warhols, the Brian's Jonestown Massacre, and it kind of pits the frontmen against each other. Anton Newcomb from Brian's Jonestown Massacre is kind of shown as the more talented one, whereas Courtney from the Dandy Warhols is more ambitious, and they become like a, you know, pretty big band there for a while, especially in Europe, as the Brian's Jonestown Massacre sort of toils in obscurity with, you know, substance abuse problems and all sorts of things. Such a good movie, though.
It's so good. Yeah. You know, Dandy Warhols, I think they headlined the first two Coachellas, or they headlined one of them back in the day. Yeah, I love that movie. For a while, you could watch it for free on YouTube. I think it might still be there. Yeah. So, I mean, it's easy if you haven't seen them. I remember I watched that movie about a year before I moved to Portland, and a lot of it takes place in Portland. The Dandy Warhols are from here. And you can actually still see them play in Portland pretty often. And that album, the Dandy Warhol's Rule Okay, I love that album. It's like came out in like 95 or so. And they reissued it, I believe a few years ago. So it was actually pretty easy to find. That movie's
yeah, so it's good. The kind of movie, it doesn't matter what you're interested in or if you know anything about those two bands, it doesn't matter at all. Like you're going to find it interesting for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's probably, one of my favorite, music related movies apart from my all time favorite Coyote Ugly, which is about,
you know, you're always like, anytime we talk about movies, like you always want to bring up Coyote Ugly. It's not only, it's your favorite music movie. It's your favorite cowboy bar theme movie. It's your favorite Jerry Bruckheimer movie. I mean, the list can go on and on with you and Cowboy Ugly.
It's my favorite Leon Rimes, movie.
It would only be second, but for me, but you know, yeah. Go on.
Dig, of course, I love High Fidelity. I think High Fidelity is a great music.
High Fidelity, now a musical headed to Broadway.
I like musicals, but I don't necessarily like them as movies. Does that make sense?
There's something about it that sort of makes me uncomfortable. It's like so intimate, mm-hmm. You know, when these people are revealing their private feelings via song and you're just right up in their face. Like, it's almost like too much information.
Yeah.
Speaking of High Fidelity, I was thinking about them this week because I was in a record shop earlier this week and the Beta Band 3 EPs has just been reissued. Oh. Kind of a nice final package. And they sold a lot of records, I think, based on that movie.
Yeah, I would imagine. Another movie that, you know, one of the more recent music-related movies that I really liked was Inside Llewyn Davis.
I didn't even think about that one. Yeah. That is a good, great music movie.
Yeah. Fictional, but really loved it.
Yeah, really, really kind of a sad movie, too. It makes me, I don't know, I get really melancholy thinking about that movie. It was really, really good. Oscar Isaac is incredible in that.
Yeah. He seems to be in a lot of movies this year as well. I also wanted to mention a couple others. One of them, speaking of sad, like after seeing this documentary, I felt so empty. Was Meeting People Is Easy, the Radiohead documentary that came out after OK Computer. And it really kind of deals with them dealing with success, and it just made me feel kind of empty after, which is I guess it's a normal feeling after a Radiohead work of art.
yeah, definitely.
But I think it was
Grant G who did. I think it was from the director. He did the No Surprises video.
Yeah,
too, I remember.
And you know, it's an interesting. It's like pretty artsy the way it's done. It's not like your typical documentary. It's a lot of footage from, you know, real footage from TVs and stuff, and them standing at photo shoots, and not much talking. Like the band isn't really talking to you in the movie.
I think you left out, the greatest music movie of all time, besides Coyote Ugly, from Justin to Kelly Clarkson. Justin, whatever his name was, the other American Idol runner-up from the first season. Classic
movie.
Dude, Kelly Clarkson is still killing it, though. I think she sold out the Staples Center just recently. She's still out here. I'm glad to see that.
Yeah. Yeah. Good for her.
Yeah. When I think, it's funny, when I think about music movies, I do go to documentaries first in my head, and like Dig is one that really stands out. The other one that I've seen over and over again, it's just endlessly watchable to me, is Metallica, Some Kind of Monster.
Oh.
Have you seen this, Nick?
No, I haven't. I thought you were going to say 24 Hour Party People.
I don't like that movie as much as I wish I did, but it has its moments. But Metallica, Some Kind of Monster, I really recommend this movie. I don't know. It's sometime in the early 2000s, and Metallica you know, their bass player leaves, they get a new bass player. And this kind of movie documents what it's like to be a middle-aged rock band that's not really sure if they want to keep doing it or not. And they're working with a therapist throughout the movie, a performance therapist, okay. This guy. And you kind of can't tell whether he's taking them on for a ride or not, or whether he's just kind of milking them for their... It's very evident that Metallica are very rich.
Yeah.
As you watch this movie.
Yeah.
And they have to do things to keep themselves interested. Lars, the drummer, is, you know, buying very expensive artwork. James Hetfield is quitting drinking and hunting bears in Siberia at points in the movie. But it is one of the funniest movies I've ever seen in my life. Kirk, the guitar player, has just some incredible one-liners throughout it. Definitely comes across as my favorite member of Metallica. It's Joe Berlinger, the great documentarian, directed it. So it's not your average band tour movie. I think it was released theatrically too. And I'm shocked that the members of Metallica allowed the movie to come out, really.
Yeah.
But it left me, you know, as knuckleheaded as they come across for a lot of the movie, it made me like them a lot more. I mean, at least humanized them a bit for me.
Yeah. I need to check it out.
That all day. Yeah, you should. You would love it. If you like Dig, you would really like the Some Kind of Monster, the Metallica movie.
Awesome. Well, there were a couple other movies I wanted to mention. I was trying to make a list, and I realized even when the movie's bad, Coyote Ugly is not bad. I'm kidding. But even when the movie's not great, if it's about music and has kind of this like redemption story or coming of age story, I'm always in.
Exactly. So
if you remember That Thing You Do, great.
Dude, I was going to bring that up myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Great movie.
I don't know if it was the same, you know, growing up in France, but that movie was on TV all the time when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And so it was one of those movies where I think I did see it in the theater, I think, when I was young, but I've seen it 100 times just on TV. And it's, you know, it's one of those when it's on, I'm like already in it. Steve Zahn, you know, it was great performance in that movie. Tom Hanks directed the movie, right? I think it's,
yeah.
One of the only movies he's ever directed. I don't know if has done one more since then.
Yeah.
And plays the band's manager. It's kind of like a, you know, they're like a Beatles copycat band coming from the States in the 60s and blowing up, and it's a fictional story. But yeah, I really like that movie a lot.
And if it's on TV, I can jump in at any time.
Yeah, exactly.
Another movie I remember seeing and that I really liked when I saw, I haven't seen it since, but it fits in that bill as like Rockstar.
The Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah. And it's like such a surreal plot, right? He goes and sees a show from his favorite band. He knows every lyric, just so happens that he can sing as well as the lead singer. And he's in the front row singing, and the lead singer sees him, and the lead singer kind of had enough of this. So he brings him up on stage and gives him the mic and leaves and just basically says, I'm out. This guy can be your lead singer. And it's, it's about, and it's Jennifer Aniston, I think, is the person he's dating.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's kind of, you know, anything about the rock star lifestyle is always kind of interesting to me.
It's an interesting season here we have, because we have this Bohemian Rhapsody movie coming out.
So yeah.
Soon, with Rami Malek playing Freddie Mercury.
And I was telling my wife last night, I was like, I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, I'm in. I mean, it doesn't have to be good. I know I'm going to like it.
And that's the other thing, like when music movies or documentaries are like biographical in nature, I'm always in. Like, I used to really like The Doors with Val Kilmer. I think
such The a Doors movie. Is a, The Doors is like one of those movies that's kind of hilarious in how weird and like serious it can be at times, but it's also like a pretty damn good movie.
Yeah. And so is Almost Famous.
Almost Famous.
Yeah. Oliver Stone. Yeah. I love that movie.
Almost Famous is a good one. That's probably one of the best movies about music ever. In terms of like an actual, a capital F film.
Yes. Yes. The cinema.
The cinema.
Walk the Line.
I like to go to the cinema. Walk the Line. No, Joaquin Phoenix. Great.
Yeah. Well, the one I didn't really like was, I didn't really care for Crazy Heart.
Really, yeah, that's kind of, you know, it kind of has some similarities with A Star Is Born, you know, without the Lady Gaga character. Bradley Cooper and Jeff Bridges' character in Crazy Heart have some similarities for sure.
8 Mile, you know?
Mom's Spaghetti.
Mom's Spaghetti. Great movie. You know, loved it.
Curtis Hanson, classic. Another,
just fits in the bill of, like, you know, coming of age redemption about music. Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah, that's a movie that is like way better than it needs to be. Yes. Like it's a better made movie than it would have made the same amount of money. Eminem, the time it came out, that song, but it's actually holds up as a pretty good movie.
I was at a bar the other day with my wife and that song was playing and we were like, what? And they actually switched the song halfway through.
What?
Yeah, I know. Weird. But the only other one I wanted to throw out there, speaking of biopics, that we're talking about capital F cinema, is Amadeus.
Oh, yeah.
That's
a classic. Like, great movie.
So good.
Mozart and Salieri. And last time I saw that movie, Nick, I caught the restoration of it on the big screen in Gay Paris.
Oh. And did it hold up?
It was incredible. I don't think that movie has lost a step. Whatever happened to Tom Hulce, though? I mean, talk about just getting in there, playing, you know, all-time great film, the lead role, great, one of the greatest, you know, parts in movie history, and then kind of dropping off the face of the earth.
Yeah, maybe he was sick of it. I don't know. Just
drop the mic.
Yeah. And a great Milos Forman movie. I mean,
yeah,
just the costumes alone are just amazing.
Yeah. A few I wanted to mention. Amadeus was on my list. You know, I love Velvet Goldmine, the Todd Haynes movie, Ewan McGregor and Jonathan Rhys-Meyers about glam rock. You know, it's all the fictional pop stars, but it's kind of T-Rex and David Bowie and Roxy Music and all these bands kind of put together in this, you know, alternate universe of glam in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And another, you know, more recent movie, Hustle and Flow. It's a really good movie. Yeah. Memphis, the pimp turned rapper, really launched Terrence Howard. Terrence Howard is incredible in that movie. I thought he should have won the Oscar that year. I was all about it. I should really watch that movie again. And you know, a couple others that I thought of besides Amadeus, Purple Rain, of course. Debatable whether Purple Rain is actually a good movie or not, but the performance scenes are amazing, and even like the dramatic scenes, there, even when it's not trying to be funny, it's so funny that it, you know, that movie has endured and will continue. And now that, you know, Prince is gone, you know, it's kind of only growing in stature, probably. But last but not least, maybe my favorite music movie ever, tied with Dig probably, this is Spinal Tap.
Oh, yeah.
The Rob Reiner movie with Christopher Guest and, you know, just about the fictional British 70s rock band. It's rewatchable. It's the jokes are a mile a minute. It's one of my favorite movies ever.
Yeah. One we didn't mention also is Control.
Yeah, the Ian Curtis story.
Yeah.
That's a dour movie.
Yeah.
But I don't know. What do you like more? Do you like Control or 24 Hour Party People more?
I think Control.
Yeah, I think it's probably the better movie on the whole.
Yeah. Leave it to me to end the podcast on a sour note. No.
I just think about that movie. It's like it's black and white. It's, you know, he had such a short life. It was rough going.
Yeah.
You know what? There's also not only is there Bohemian Rhapsody coming out, but Rocket Man, the Elton John movie, Taron Egerton is coming out pretty soon too, I think.
That's right.
There's a lot of like rock biopics coming out in the next year or so. I mean, I don't really care how good they are. I'm probably going to see them all.
And and crossovers with all the space movies that are coming out. Rocket Man, First Man.
That's like the extended astronaut universe mixed with the extended, you know, the Avengers of rock stars with Freddie Mercury and Elton John. And
Freddie Mercury, I mean, my favorite band when I was a kid was Queen. So I am.
Of course it was.
Anyway, I am all in for this. I still have the live, the Wembley show they did. And then I also have the Live Aid's Freddie Mercury tribute show. So, on DVD.
Well, good. Well, maybe we'll go through the rest of your DVD collection on the next show. Really see where those deep influences lie. What's the last DVD you bought, Nick?
It was probably a film that you can't find anywhere else. but it's been a while, I have to say.
How many years?
Probably 8.
All right.
I don't own any DVDs. Oh, I have a few that are collecting dust that I'll never watch again, but for some reason I'm not getting rid of.
Yeah, I have Dig on DVD, and I'm going to hold on to that one.
Yeah, you can watch it for free on YouTube. So
even though it can be watched for free. You know, just I like things that take up space and make my life less manageable.
That's basically the American way.
I'm talking about myself. And on that note, thanks for sticking around, everyone.
We really know how to close a show.
You know, we're going to pick up the closing of the show. We get the opening. We start off strong and we fall down the hill sometimes. But, you know, it makes us better getting our reps in.
Exactly. All right, Hunter, let's end this.
All right, until next time, Nick.
All right, see you.